Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cents. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First question is this: our 8-year-old son has a real problem with other people eating in the same room as him. This has steadily deteriorated over the last year, and so to the point where he can only eat with the rest of the family with a folding screen in front of him at the dining table. We are trying to find a child psychologist because we're really worried that unless this is addressed, it will really impact on him. Any advice on what we should be doing?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. I think at this stage, I would, you know, suggest you go somewhere, but it's where you go that's the pertinent piece. I mean, you're saying here it has steadily deteriorated over the last year or so. So what I'm wondering is, could he tolerate eating with other people present, or other people eating in his presence rather, before a year ago? And has there been any trigger? So he would have been around 6.5, 7, say. Did anything happen? And again, I always say when I'm asking for a trigger, think about that from the perspective of a young child, because what might seem insignificant to us could be very significant in their lives. So was there anything, a family death, a move, a friend who moved away, some kind of significant change that may have triggered this? And again, I have another question around, are there any other areas of his life that are affected by similar behaviours to this? Does he display kind of a hypersensitivity to temperature change, to noisy environments, to a change in routine, anything like that? Is there any other areas that you would also see, yeah, it's not as big an issue as this, but there are some concerns? I would say just note all of those down. I suppose what I'm wondering is, could it be a sensory issue even more so than a psychological issue? And you might consider having a therapeutic occupational therapist, you know, do a sensory profile or a thorough assessment to see, could this be a sensory processing challenge he's having? Particularly around that, because other people eating around you, there's a lot going on with that in terms of noise and interaction. And what he might need in order to be able to eat his own meal is complete silence and no other stimulation. So certainly you're on the right track. You could go to a child psychologist. In fact, there are many, especially if you're thinking of going private, there are many child psychologists who would work collaboratively with occupational therapists and would be able to co-refer, you know, over that, okay, this isn't really for me. Let me give you the name of someone else to see. So go and ask these questions. In the meantime, while you're doing that, I'm going to suggest just something that may or may not help. But, you know, I think it's useful to have something practical that you could be doing while you're waiting on an appointment. Perhaps involve him in cooking or preparing the meal that's going to be served, so that he, when it comes to the table, he's sharing what he prepared, what he made with others. And that might give him more pleasure to see them enjoying the food he prepped.
If it's a sensory thing, though, then it's the sound of eating.
Exactly.
And all,
if it's a sensory thing, that won't make a difference.
Yeah.
So I would like, I would encourage this parent, certainly consult with a child psychologist and possibly an occupational therapist around this.
Yeah. Wow. Asha, is that... Now, because we've had kind of questions similar to that before, but that seems quite extreme for that age.
It's quite a long time for his age. That's the piece. I mean, I would always be asking parents, you know, how long is this symptom going on? Is it something that is persistent and over prolonged time? And in a child's life, 12 months or more is considered a prolonged time. Mm. So you're saying this is, you know, steadily deteriorating over the last year or so. So, yeah, at that stage, I would say, at least consult with somebody, if only to have things ruled out. And they may be able to give you, knowing, you know, when they have more detail than this letter provides, some very kind of practical steps that you can do, because sometimes small changes make big differences with things like this.
Yeah. At what age is it appropriate for kids to put some pants on? It's been one hot summer, and my toddler and preschooler have spent most of it being easy breezy by the paddling pool. When is it appropriate for siblings to stop being naked around each other? It's a good question.
It's a really good question. I think it's something that, you know, there's been a lot of easy breezy going on in people's houses because of the good weather. So, I mean, actually, there's no developmental answer to this. I mean, what I would say is that children developmentally will be able to differentiate what's private and what's public. You know, by the age of kind of 3 and 4, they can do that, right? And, you know, usually there's a degree of modesty that sets in around then. And again, I'm saying usually and generally because all children are different. What we tend to find is the biggest influencing factor in children's own attitudes to being naked around each other is parental attitudes. How comfortable are you with it?
Yeah.
And if you're saying, I have no issue with this and I'm very comfortable, we're a naked kind of house and this is not an issue for us, leave it alone, it's fine.
Mm.
And what you might want to consider is just a body boundary around where is it okay to be naked and where isn't
it? Yes, of course.
Because
yeah.
what's fine in your back garden with your paddling pool in your home may not be something that's fine if you're in a public swimming pool or if you're out somewhere else or in somebody else's home. So just be aware of that. And it's a useful way of bringing up boundaries and limit setting with young children anyway. There's absolutely no harm in teaching that different situations call for different behaviours. So you can be naked here, but you can't be naked there. So I think it's a nice way of bringing that up. Some 4 or 5 year olds can feel very strongly about privacy and body privacy, and they may be expressing, I don't want to share a bath with my brother or sister. I want you to close your eyes when I take my clothes off. 4 and 5 year olds can do that. And for other children, that won't kick
won't
in for them.
They keep their trousers on at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they could be 8 or 9 and you're saying to them, I might close my eyes while you do that, or maybe do that. So it really is about comfort and consent. If your child is showing discomfort and is not okay with being put in the bath with their naked sibling, then you have to respect that and
yeah.
respond to it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be different in every home.
So in a way, you're saying they'll tell you. Really,
they
you
will
know.
Tell you.
Yeah.
They really will. And if they're not telling you by a certain age, you may have to step in and introduce
yeah, okay.
the topic yourself.
Yeah. Mid-20s.
Yes.
Yeah. Time to stop now. I've a 10-year-old boy who sleepwalks. This really worries us. And we sleep with one eye open. He's a very happy boy, but his sleep walked for years. And we're wondering, will he grow out of it? My fear is that he'll fall down the stairs or walk at the front door. I've put a baby gate on the stairs as a result. How can we help him stop?
Yeah,
or I mean, can they?
Yeah, I don't think you can. But I like the way you're thinking about the baby gate. What I don't like is that you're having to sleep with one eye open. That
yeah.
is quite a high level of anxiety here. And just important to clarify, sleepwalking tends to be a term that's all encompassing. And it isn't always just about walking in your sleep. Some people sit up, some do go wandering, and some might do something deemed, you know, more inappropriate, like peeing in the wardrobe in their sleep or something like
yeah.
that. But they are highly unlikely to remember any of that when they wake. So usually we find it's actually a lot more common in children than we might think. It's actually very common for children to do some or all of those behaviours, but they usually outgrow it by their teenage years. So sleepwalking is a lot less common by adulthood. It is definitely scary as a parent for all the reasons this parent says about, you know, what if they fell down the stairs? What if something happened? It tends to happen or begin within the first couple of hours of sleep because it's between that stage 3 and 4 of your sleep cycles. So it's usually when the brain is trying to make a transition from one stage of sleep to another that this glitch happens,
right, okay.
if you like.
Yeah.
Other things that can trigger it could be medication. If you have irregular bedtimes, if there's an illness, as in if the child is ill, and if there is something stressful or anxiety provoking, they can all serve as triggers. But equally, it can be something not psychosocial like that and just something that's happening. You could try playing soothing music to aid those sleep transitions, relaxation exercises before bed. Obviously, and this is a child we're talking about, so one assumes no caffeine, but I'm mentioning caffeine in case there's any kind of sugary drinks or anything like that. Put that in that category. And you could make bedtime a little bit earlier just to ensure that the sleep is as deep as possible before this would happen. I mean, they're generally, sleepwalking is not usually harmful, nor is it typically a sign of emotional disturbance. So just to reassure anybody about that. But if you are worried or if it's causing significant problems at home and everybody's on edge, you can certainly go to your GP because there may be something they could prescribe or talk to you about with it. In the meantime, try not to wake him, but gently guide him back to bed. When you discover him sleepwalking, do lock your windows and doors as a safety precaution and remove any obvious obstacles so that if he's sleepwalking, he's not likely to stumble or fall over something and hurt himself. The safety gates are a really good idea. You might, if it was a big issue in your house with stairs and other bedrooms and other rooms and doors and all of the windows and all of that, you could consider putting the safety gate on his bedroom door. Just always be very cognizant about fire and health and safety, you know, exits too.
Yeah.
Just always be aware of that and making sure that that works for you. But if it's a, you know, one of those clippy stair gates that people use on their stairs anyway, that doesn't impede exits or access, then I think you could do that. And really, there isn't a whole lot else you can do, but just go with it. I'm afraid I don't have a nice, neat answer for that one.
The thing is, and look, we've kind of got variants on that many times before. Plus, lots of adults have told us about sleepwalking. Does it actually happen that people fall downstairs or set fire to themselves or, you know, or all those things people are terrified that you're going to do because you're in your sleep?
I think it can happen and there's a risk of it happening. Mm. I generally find when it comes to children, parents are hyper cautious about it as soon as they discover it. So it generally doesn't happen because of safety gates. And, you know, there's all kinds of things. You could put an alarm on the door, but I'm not going to encourage you to do that because that's just going to make everybody else hyper vigilant as well and disturb the whole house if you've more children than this boy, and you don't want to shock him out of his sleep state because that can be very frightening. Always be aware he's not consciously aware of what's happening. Mm. The best thing is to find him and gently direct him back to bed.
Yeah. Someone says, maybe give the child a bedroom downstairs and lock the front door. Then everyone could sleep. Ooh, I don't know if they would.
I'm not sure if I'd put my child downstairs if I was upstairs.
I don't think anybody would want to do that.
But I get your point, though. What you're saying is, you know, that at least it would eliminate some of those
stairs
anxiety
thing,
triggers.
But you're further away then.
Yeah.
I can't stand the sound that people make when eating with their mouths open and I sleepwalk. I'm 43. I think I'm normal. Don't worry. So there
you
go.
You are normal.
Bringing two
don't
things
worry.
Together.
Yeah.
There, really. And my 14-year-old son is very open about looking at women's breasts. It happens in restaurants when we're out shopping. Even his teachers had noticed it before summer break. It actually gets to the point that I have to tell him off for it. I know he's got a lot of hormones and feelings going on right now, but he's being so obvious. His dad tried to talk to him about it, but he said he didn't want to talk about it. Is there a way to address it without giving out to him or making him feel uncomfortable?
Gosh, I mean, yeah, they don't teach you this when you're taking your child home from the maternity hospital. But yeah, absolutely, you've got to. I know his dad has tried to talk to him. I'm going to say, Dad, you got to try again. You're going to have to go back. And it's not about, you know, I don't want to talk about this. This may be about empathizing with that and saying, I accept that you don't want to talk about it, but actually we have to talk about it. And the reason we have to talk about it is, and then you frame it in terms of what is socially appropriate and not. I think, you know, first of all, my question is he aware that he's doing it in the moment? I don't mean afterwards when it's pointed out to him, because he's sounding like he might experience shame afterwards. But is he aware he's doing it in the moment, or is he kind of zoning out and just
randomly looking?
Exactly. Yeah. As always, you don't want to shame him, but you do want to instill social boundaries. I'm wondering, have you spoken with him? I assume you have, but I don't want to make that assumption at the same time about sex in general and sexual development before now. Because if you have, refer back to those conversations you've previously had and now grow it up in line with him. Reflect and wonder with him about how his staring might make others feel. So instead of saying don't do it, say, I'm wondering how that lady might feel when you do this. I'm wondering how your teacher would feel if you're doing this. And don't let him go, I don't know, I don't want to talk about it, but say, no, we got to talk about this.
Yeah,
I think you've got to take that out of his hands. The other thing I want to just mention here, and again, I'm not accusing this boy of this, so I don't want to get him in trouble or if he's not doing it. Just explore if he might be viewing pornography online. And because it's so common with all teenagers, not just teenage boys, but all teenagers getting sexual education and information from online pornography. And you might need to explain the difference between staring at a picture and staring in real life. I know that sounds really obvious, but I think...
And your brain almost doesn't see the difference.
This is exactly it. And especially when you're a teenager, your teenage brain, the way it's neurologically developing may need an explicit statement around that. So I think, you know, and if you start bringing up words like online pornography and talking about that, that's going to let him know that you are comfortable talking about this uncomfortable subject. So if you're not comfortable, you're going to role play and practice that on each other before you go to him. You've got to go to him calm, cool and collected about this.
Still, good luck with that conversation.
Good luck with that. Let us know how that goes. But definitely, you've got to talk about it, because I suppose my worry is at this stage, if he continues to do it, if you don't have that conversation with him, somebody's going to call him out in a very abrupt and aggressive way, and that might completely overwhelm him.
Yeah.
Especially if he's not aware he's doing it in the moment.
We have to take a break now. After that, a 4-year-old still sucking her dodie. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna is still with us. Next question is, my four-year-old still has her dodie. Everywhere she goes, she lobs it in the gob and sucks away goodo. I'm sick of it. When I take it away, she gets herself into an awful state and then I give in. She talks with it in her mouth, which just drives me mad. How can I stop it without causing her trauma? I need it gone before going to Montessori in September.
Oh, there's a lot in the language here. Mm. You know, she's lobbing it in the gob. You're sick of it. You take it away. You know, you have to stop it. It drives you mad. I mean, this is really frustrating, this parent. But I'm going to, you know, wreck your head even more now and say maybe you got to stop and flip your thinking on this to what does this mean to her to keep it rather than why must she give it up? When you say you need it gone before Montessori, is that a requirement by Montessori? I'm not sure. Why do you need it gone? So just have a think about that. Look, generally, the reason people out there, those people, encourage us to get kids to give up their dodies by the age of four and over is generally around its potential impact on speech and teeth.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of children aren't going to have any loss of teeth in their second teeth before they're six and a half years old.
How can it affect speech?
Because the dodie's in there in terms of their ability to form and shape words and get their tongue around.
Okay,
and it can be, not for every child, but that's generally why people are saying it's never about, you know, manners, social behaviour or psychology. We don't emotionally say you must give up that dodie. It tends to be more tangible medical reasons.
Yes, yeah.
It's definitely best that she come to a place to give it up rather than have it taken away.
Mm.
Because even think about that yourself. If somebody's going to take something from you, doesn't that just make you want to cling to it all the more? And always ask yourself, if I take this away from her, what am I leaving her with? What purpose does this serve? I mean, it's probably a comfort thing at this stage. And if so, what else could I do? So, but I am hearing that this is absolutely wrecking your head. So following that, what can you do practically? Talk to her about it. She's four. You can't talk to a four-year-old.
Mm.
So talk to her about it and plan with her. It's time to give it up. So let's make a plan together for how we will give it up so that it's not happening to her, but it's happening with her. So that would include in your plan when, how and to whom. And what I mean by to whom is there's lots of creative things. You could plant it in the garden and put a seed over it so that she sees her dodie grow into a tree or a pretty flower. You could donate it to the poor babies who have no dodies. Some children don't care. They don't want the poor babies to have their dodie, but others do. You could get, you know, you can actually buy a dodie fairy, or you could create a dodie fairy and you leave it out with a note and the dodie fairy comes and takes it away and leave something. Give it to Santa. You could also, something I think can be quite nice is if you're open to it, go to, you know, the Build-A-Bear type of place and you could get them to put the dodie in the bear when they're stuffing it. And that way you've given her what we call in the psychology aspect of this, a transitional object. So when she needs her dodie, she can cuddle it, even if she can't suck it, but she still technically has it, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah.
So I kind of like the idea of her giving it up but not losing it, particularly because she is still really young and this matters to her.
Yeah.
So think about it from the perspective of a four-year-old. What's going to make it easier for her to do this and work with her at that level? And I think something in there should work for you.
Yeah, because it is really, because when they're that young and they've had that for such
young.
A long time, it's enormously important.
And especially if she's going to Montessori in September, that's a big transition that's coming
her
way.
Yeah.
So we can often expect and anticipate some behavioural and emotional regression around the time of change and transition. So it might not be the ideal time to do it. Just hold that in
mind. Yeah, because I thought, you know, the creche would maybe say, we'll take it off them in the morning, give back to them when
that's
it's nap time.
That
and
might
kind
be
of
a
stuff.
Parent thing as opposed to the Montessori.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of Montessori's requesting no dodies, but I stand to be corrected on that. There could be a system like that.
I gave my soothers to the monkeys in Fota Park.
Yeah.
Worst day of my life.
Oh no, and you're still holding that.
Yeah, we had a dodie addiction problem in our house. We asked our daughter what she wanted most in the world and she said a mermaid. A few days later, I brought her to a fountain, told her to make a wish to the fairies. The next day, she got a letter in the post from the dodie fairy saying they had heard her wish for a mermaid and she would like to make a deal. The letter said that all the fairy babies need new dodies and that if our daughter gave them hers, then she would give her a mermaid as a gift. We hung the dodies on the tree. that night, and the next day there was a mermaid doll in their place.
Perfect. That's like an amalgamation of everything in that list there. Yeah. So that works. That's lovely.
Somebody else says, tie the Dodi to a helium balloon and send them out to play.
You could do that.
Could do that. My four-year-old still had hers. I found out what she wanted, left it under her pillow, and the fairy left her a present. It solved the problem. So that's a less elaborate version of the
other. There's
one.
A lot of kind of bartering and swapping going on. And if that's what works, great. But always make sure you're involving your child in that process and it's not just abruptly happening to them.
My three-year-old finds it really hard to be around strangers, even children in the playground or in our estate on the green. She wraps herself around my leg and won't leave my side. She's starting a new play school in September. What can I do to help her be more open to people and to enjoy herself?
Oh, she's really young. I mean, three is really, really young. So, you know, don't expect too much. And what she's showing you is that she is, you know, her personality may be of the more shy orientation. There's nothing wrong with that. And she's clearly seeing you as her secure base, hence wrapping herself around you. So there's a lot of positives in here. This is a little girl who knows this doesn't feel safe for me and I know how to make myself feel better. So just to positively reframe that in your head, going, she's quite resourceful. So yeah, she does sound shy, but just to be clear, shyness is not antisocial, because often she may be very interested in new people and very interested in new situations, but her shyness may trigger what I call her internal worry alarm, a little uh-oh system that, this looks exciting, but I don't feel able to do it. So don't push too hard because it's going to make her more resistant. And she may actually blossom in play school over time, but, you know, do let them know in advance that she's shy, you know, before she goes in. Let them know that this might be difficult for her, because then they can be more sensitive and attuned to it. But actually, she may come into her own through the process of play school.
Yes,
this may actually be really good for her. Give her time. So drive by the park and point it out, saying, we're going to go here tomorrow. And then she knows, okay, I'm going to go to the park tomorrow. I know what that looks like. So again, you're letting her process it before it happens. Do the same thing with school or starting school or wherever it might be. And then empathize and name the feeling. I know that this doesn't feel very good right now, but I'm here with you and I'm going to stay beside you until it feels like you can take a chance and try something out. Because you're making sense then of what she can't make sense of, which is that emotional feeling. And you could set some ground rules in advance. You can stick by me for three nursery rhymes. Don't say time, because she's 3 years old and that means nothing. We'll sing three nursery rhymes, and when the three are over, then you got to go away from me and play, but I'll still be here watching you, and then you can come back to me.
Yes.
So you're building up her resilience, but you're also structuring it for her so that it feels safe and secure. But she's only three. I would say give her time. And I really think she will blossom once she's going to play school and experiencing more new situations outside and away from mum.
My five-year-old son is allergic to dairy products. It's really hard when we're out and about, as he always wants an ice cream cone. He knows he can't have one, and I have the dairy-free ones at home, but he says it's not the same. I know he's feeling excluded from his brothers. How can I make him see how important it is to stay away from them and to feel like not like he's missing out?
Oh, well, you can't really, because he is missing out and he knows that. So, I mean, you can't magic it better, but you must, because this is a condition that you must hold the boundary. So, I mean, if he understands why he can't have them, but he's still looking for the ice cream cone, he's letting you know, I'm frustrated that I can't have them.
Yeah,
so I'm going to keep pushing that boundary, but I do know you're not going to give it to me, but I want you to know how frustrated I am. So you can empathize but reflect why and hold the boundary. That's ultimately it. I know this is really hard. It must be so frustrating when your brothers or whoever can have this and you can't. But, and then switch it to, what things can you have? Some special treats that he can have. If you're going somewhere and, you know, ice cream season, you know, there isn't too much left in it at this stage. Yeah. But could you bring like a special smoothie with the ingredients he can have and put it like in a little cold pack so that you have it to hand that is just for him? Or bring everyone a special smoothie and skip the ice cream when you're out in a group. I'm not saying deny the other kids, but, you know, it doesn't have to always be that everyone gets ice cream and I don't get it. Maybe it's everyone gets this smoothie that everyone can share in together. But ultimately on this one, you have to hold a boundary, but do it in an empathic way so that you're not just lecturing, well, you know you can't have it, so don't be asking me, because that's going to further frustrate him.
Well, plus also as well, for lactose intolerant people in general, the range of products now is now enormous, and there are all sorts of ice creams.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ben and Jerry's do one and all that kind of stuff that So I'm told, because I feel my kids are lactose intolerant as well.
You know, I think really all good. Of those free from food requirements have improved exponentially because it's, you know, people are choosing it even if they don't need to do it.
Yeah.
So I think you've got a lot more choice. And that's why I would say to you, flip the conversation to what can he have? Name all the things he can have instead of the one or two things he can't.
Just going back to the Dodie issue, Paul says, put pepper on it or cut a hole in it. That's what my parents did.
Mm. I know. I'm aware they cut the hole in it and the pepper or some harmless but unpleasant taste. But again, you're really doing that to the child.
Yeah.
I think if you can do it in a way that they feel they have more control over surrendering it, it's going to be much more successful.
Someone says, we told our four-year-old that Santa collected all four-year-old Dodies at Christmas in return for gifts. She was happy with that, or so it appeared. When we asked her later what she wanted from Santa, she said, a bag of Dodies. She deduced that Santa had a lot of Dodies, major backfire. So, yeah, maybe not the best one to do. Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We'll take a break. After that, the secret war against Napoleon.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.